Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press and the Hellas Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Kalamu Yassalam, editor of New Orleans Griot, the Tom Dent Reader. It's a pleasure to welcome Kalamu Yassalam back to The Reading Life. Kalamu is one of New Orleans' most prolific artists, editors, and well-known teachers. He's known for his poetry, plays, and essays, and for the work he does as director of Students at the Center, an independent writing program in New Orleans area high schools. Today, we're talking about his new book, A True Labor of Love in Editing, New Orleans Griot, the Tom Dent Reader. Playwright, poet, and memoirist Tom Dent was born in New Orleans in 1932. He died here in 1998. His father, Albert Covington Dent, was the president of Dillard University, and Tom often recalled growing up on campus. He attended Morehouse College and Syracuse University and helped to found the influential writers group Umbra, so important to the Black Arts Movement. In New Orleans, he was known for his work with the Free Southern Theater, especially his play, Ritual Murder, as well as for his poetry and his memoir, Southern Journey, A Return to the Civil Rights Movement. New Orleans Griot is a long overdue celebration of his literary legacy. Kalamu Yassalam, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me here.
So Tom was a person that you knew well and admired and had a great friendship with. So I wonder if you'd tell us a little bit about him and how this book came about.
Well, to talk about Tom is difficult without going on at length. I was in the military, in the Army, and came out of the Army in 1964, June of 1964. My girlfriend at the time, Thelma Thomas, had checked out the theaters in the city and wrote and told me that there were three, the Nat Turner Theater, the Dashiki Theater, and the Free Southern Theater. And she recommended that she thought I would like the Free Southern Theater the best. So when I got out of the military in June, I went to each of the theaters. Turns out I talked with and worked with Norbert Davison, who was the resident playwright of the Dashiki Theater, and Viola Calhoun, who was one of the principals of the Nat Turner Theater. She lived in the neighborhood where I grew up in the Lower Ninth Ward. But the Free Southern Theater was the one that really attracted me, and that was because of Tom. And Tom and I met, and we just hit it off. There's no way to describe it other than we were waiting for each other to come along. And by December of 68, we were working together, editing in combo. And by the following spring of 69, we had produced five chapbooks of poetry. There were 16, 20 pages. It wasn't much each, but there were five of them. And from there, it just kept going. I can tell you two things to illustrate how close Tom and I were. After his death, whenever I would travel, and I don't travel much anymore, but I used to travel literally around the world. But whenever I would go north and it was cold, The gloves I have were Tom's gloves. So he's literally holding my hand.
Yes.
And the second thing I can tell you is that Tom guided me to learn not only about New Orleans, but about the world. So through Tom, I met a number of people, some of whom have remained totems in my life. Skunder, who was an Ethiopian visual artist, Willie from South Africa, poet, and who is now an official with the ANC. Kamau Brathwaite,
yes,
from Barbados, but who did most of his adult work after leaving England, came back to the Caribbean and did most of his adult work at University of Mona in Jamaica. I consider Kamau Brathwaite the greatest poet of the Western Hemisphere. Here at home, Tom introduced me to people whom I would not have known otherwise, such as Danny Barker. Spent many, many hours with Danny Barker. Tom and I would go to the Glass House in Uptown New Orleans to listen to the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. Tom also took me throughout Mississippi because he was teaching at Mary Holmes College in West Point, Mississippi, and being Mississippi, West Point is a oxymoronic name because it's located on extreme northeast of Mississippi, but it's called West Point. So we spent hours on the road going back and forth through Mississippi. And at one point we traveled from East Texas, Houston primarily, all the way over to the Carolinas. And Tom knew a lot of the people who had been active in the civil rights movement. So in West Point, we hooked up with John Buffington. In Little Rock, Arkansas, we hooked up with Worth Long. These might be, not be names that many people are familiar with, but these were stalwarts in the civil rights movement. And Tom introduced me to all of them, and we traveled. So I had this grounding with Tom, in which Tom showed me the world. I mean, literally showed me the world. And I was seduced.
Of course. Well, it's so interesting because now, in a way, you're showing him to the world.
Yes, but, you know, Abram Himmelstein, who was head of the UNO Press, asked me about would I be interested in doing a collection of Tom's writings because he had found out that I was close to Tom. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, I would be interested in it. But I had no idea what I was getting involved in because I knew Tom for years. I was close to Tom. In fact, the apartment that Tom lived in when he died, right after that, I rented that building and ran a workshop. We ran the workshop for a month short of 10 years. We were set to celebrate our 10th year anniversary in September of 2005. And of course, Katrina hit in August of 2005. And that was the end of that.
And that was NOMO. That was a fabulous literary workshop.
So I was close to Tom, and I would sometimes go by Tom's house and or his apartment, wherever he was living at the time. And he would never, regardless of what he was working on, he would never turn me away. I've seen him not answer the phone. I've seen him not answer the door, you know, but he would never turn me away. I had enough sense to know when he was really working to tell him, okay, well, I'll catch up with you later. I just wanted to know one thing and leave. I don't know how else to describe it except to say that we were looking for each other and didn't know it.
Mm-hmm. It's like that thing in The Year of Living Dangerously when Billy is looking at the other character, and he goes, could you be the unmet friend? You know, and yeah. You know that unmet friend the minute they come along. So when you got to Amistad and you're looking through Tom's papers, I mean, what's so interesting to me and what is so utterly captivating about this book is its range It's complete range. You have two of his plays, including Ritual Murder, which deserves to be so much more widely known and performed. And you have his poems, his essays, personal correspondence, some of his thoughts that would become Southern Journey, a return to the civil rights movement. So what was it like for you to go through your friend's papers in that way? It's such an intimate thing for a writer to do that.
Well, I made a decision early on that I was working on an anthology, a collection of Tom's writings, and I was not working on a biography.
Yeah.
In fact, myself and Abram Himmelstein, we had a, it was not a conflict as much as a difference in terms of what should be included, what should not be included. I was not interested in doing a biography. You know, I knew Tom, but I was not interested in describing Tom, describing Tom's life and all of this and so forth. I was interested in getting his writings out. And because I had been present, literally present, when much of it was written. And when I got to Amistad to do the research is when I received a major shock, because as close as I was to Tom, Amiri Baraka, whom I also knew and was friends with, would sometimes say that, you know, people you're close to, you think you know them. But then something happens and you say, I never knew you thought that, or I never knew you felt like that. Well, I was close to Tom, very, very close to Tom. I got to Amistad and found out that his writings, journals, notebooks, manuscripts, letters, literally take up over 140 linear feet. The amount of work that Tom Dent did, I had no idea that he had done that much work, because he didn't publish as much, that much.
That's the other attraction for readers in this book, is that so much of it was unpublished and is unknown and will be a discovery.
Yeah. So that was the big thing for me, to realize that this was an opportunity to put. So what I decided to do was just do it chronologically. Mm-hmm. And the first entries or from when Tom was at Morehouse, he wrote a piece for the, what is called, a Maroon Tiger, something like that, the paper at Morehouse, and that's included. Then he went on to Syracuse University for grad school. And then he was, while he was at Syracuse, he would go to, down to New York from Syracuse. And he was living in New York briefly. The cover picture is from the Umbra workshop that Tom was part of in New York. And there was an incident that happened that, and Tom told me about it, that he was assaulted in an armed robbery and in New York, and his family insisted that he come home. He came home with the idea that he would be here for a couple of months and then he would go back to New York. That was Tom's thinking. He never got back to New York.
Well, I'd love it if you'd read that passage that describes what happens to him when he comes back to New Orleans, because you wrote this in such a lovely and insightful way.
Tom was seduced and enraptured by the city of his birth, the same locale he had left and within which he had not expected to ever be permanently domiciled. His friends and comrades were in New York, not to mention the cornucopia of earthly wonders available there on a daily basis in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and the outer boroughs of the pinnacle metropolis of the United States of America. When Tom had departed for schooling in Atlanta, he had been too young to fully appreciate the intoxication of working-class Black New Orleans, where there were no expectations nor disappointments about how Tom chose to live. In one sense, he was seeing his childhood home for the first time as an adult. By 1968, Tom found that he was not only comfortable in his hometown, he was enchanted. The cultural depth of the music, the musicians, and the black neighborhood social organizations, both of which generally didn't care from whence one came, or for that matter, to where he or she was headed. Whether you were a fourth-generation resident or a newly arrived immigrant from overseas, New Orleans fed your spirit and embraced you as though you were a long-lost friend. And indeed, Tom's deep appreciation of New York notwithstanding, for him, New Orleans was not only the city of his birth, but unexpectedly also became the site of Tom's maturing as a writer and cultural activist. On this second time around, New Orleans became the cradle of Tom's rebirth.
He wrestled a lot with the city, as we all do, didn't he?
Yeah, well, that's the dialectics of life. Without going too deep into it, I'm one of these people that does not believe in absolutes. There's no such thing as good or bad. We all have it.
Mm-hmm.
The potential and the probability of doing ill or well. And sometimes we manifest that at the same time. Sometimes we walk in the straight and narrow for a while. And then other times we walk on the wild side. And there are many, many people who deny the dialectics of themselves. They see everything in terms of dualism. And so they think that the good and the bad are fighting each other. They think if they don't do exactly what the law says, then they're wrong, they're an outlaw, and so forth and so on. And Tom helped me understand that we all got everything within us. It depends on what we do with our lives, what we do with our impulses, our desires. Many of us are afraid of our desires, so we attempt to, for lack of a better word, to restrain ourselves, to constrain ourselves, to put ourselves under lock and key. Others of us say, okay, what can I do with whatever I'm feeling, with whatever I'm doing, with whoever I am? What can I do to make this world better?
Mm-hmm. And Tom, it seems to me, it's so interesting that so much of this material was unpublished. Because one thing that you write about at length is that you and Tom both knew the importance of having an engaged audience.
Yes.
Through the theater. And so were you surprised that he kept this much back?
I don't know if he kept it back as much as there were not many outlets for the work.
Sure.
I don't think he was trying to hide anything or anything.
The writing may have been just for him. There's this incredibly intimate letter where he's kind of taking an inventory writing to his psychiatrist that is, you know, we should all be able to write those letters about ourselves. You know what I mean?
To Dr. Brayboy, which was his actual name, Brayboy.
Yeah.
And this was when Tom was in New York. He wrote that letter. But what was interesting about the letter is that he wrote it in such a way that you would think Tom was the psychoanalyst.
Yes, he did.
You know, I mean, he bore down into his feelings and what that possibly meant and so forth and so on. It's an amazing letter. And so there's a lot of that in the book.
What do you think people who've never read Tom Dent are going to discover in this book? Because you are really introducing him again. And I'm curious to see how you invite them to discover him.
Well, I maintain that Tom is the premier New Orleans writer of all time. There's no other writer who was born in New Orleans and did the amount of work that male, female, contemporary, ancient, it doesn't matter.
Ancient.
It doesn't matter. Nobody else has matched that volume of work. And so I think that people will be surprised, as I'm sure you are. I would consider one of the, I guess we use the term, doyens of...
I'm just a reader. You know,
right, yeah, right. One of the doyens of literature in New Orleans. You may just be a reader, but your interest is beyond the page, and you reach out to get to know people and so forth and so on, and to record them just as we're doing now. But you had no idea that Tom had done this amount of work.
No, I'd read the poetry. I'd read Southern Journey. Mm-hmm. I'd read Ritual Murder. But the rest of it, such a gift. Such a gift to the reading world.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that what people will get is a way to look at New Orleans that they never even thought about before.
And that questing intelligence, you know, of his, and ruthless honesty. I think that's what I felt most of all come through in this book.
Well, that was, how can I put it? That was why the question had to be answered. Am I doing a biography or am I doing an anthology? A biography is going, if it comes, it'll be later and it won't be me. I'm not interested in doing that. But I understand that after you read this book or read portions of this book, you're going to want to know more about Tom. You could read this book and not know that Tom was 6 feet something, a large man, you know, and so forth. You could read this book and not know he was infatuated and constantly was playing tennis, you know. I was not interested in tennis, so I didn't. I never played tennis with Tom, but that was one of his. You could read this and not know that he was a baseball fanatic, and would have the radio on listening to baseball games and so forth and so on. There's so much, you know what I'm saying?
And a son of New Orleans, a son of, you know, a distinguished family who wrestled with that, wrestled with his place in the city.
But part of that was because he was the son of Albert Dent, who was the president of Dillard University. And Tom rejected that strata of society. Mm-hmm. For as far as his personal condition, he didn't hate anybody. He didn't hate his father. He didn't have that kind of thing. But that was not for Tom,
right?
And so that's something that a lot of us have difficulty learning. That is, how can we establish ourselves as an individual without striking out against those who brought us into the world?
Well, you sure see the love and the struggle in this book. You really do. Mm-hmm. We've been talking with Kalamu Yassalam, editor of the new book, New Orleans Griot, The Tom Dent Reader. You can meet him Tuesday, January 16th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. when he appears in conversation with Ishmael Reed. That's at the John Georges Auditorium at Dillard University. Free, but get tickets at eventbrite.com. Kalamu, thank you so much.
Thank you, and I hope that you have cause to do this program for many more years, and there'll be many other writers whom you will interview.
Well, you keep at it. Thanks.
Okay.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Jessica Schecksnyder and Mary B. Manheim discuss and sign Fragile Grounds, Louisiana's Endangered Cemeteries, Tuesday, January 16th at 6 at Octavia Books. Today's guest, Kalamu Yassalam, appears in conversation with Ishmael Reed, Tuesday, January 16th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the John Georges Auditorium at Dillard University. Free, but register at eventbrite.com. This is part of the Conversations in Color series, sponsored by Amistad Research Center. Geographer Richard Campanella and archivist Sally Reeves present A Graceful Curve in the River and Making Groceries, a discussion of New Orleans' unique character in architecture and culinary consumerism. That's Wednesday, January 17th from 6 to 7:30 at Ladder Library. It's part of New Orleans 300, a tricentennial lecture series at the Public Library, inspired by the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities publication, New Orleans and the World. Tulane Professor Lady Hubbard will receive the 11th Ernest J. Gaines Award for Literary Excellence for her novel, The Talented Ripkins. That's in a ceremony Thursday, January 18th at 6:30 at the Manship Theater at the Shaw Center for the Arts in Baton Rouge. Free and open to the public, but make reservations at gainesaward@braf.org. Tyler Bridges discusses and signs Long Shot, Thursday, January 18th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. The Octavia Books Book Club discusses All the King's Men by Robert Penn Warren, Saturday, January 20th at 10:30 at Octavia Books. The Fun with Big Fat Books reading group starts its spring season with As I Lay Dying. That's beginning January 23rd for 3 weeks, following that up with The Sound and the Fury beginning February 19th. Email Abita Blaylock, that's ABITA BLAYLOCK, @gmail.com for information and fees. Marta Cohen discusses and signs Behind Enemy Lines, the true story of a French-Jewish spy in Nazi Germany, Thursday, January 25th at 6 at the National World War II Museum. John McGill discusses and signs The Incomparable Magazine Street, Thursday, January 25th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. The Dogfish Reading Series presents a reading by Brad Richard and Elizabeth Gross, Thursday, January 25th at 7 at 2448 North Villeray. Sydney Ballard discusses and signs A Cajun in France, Journey to Assimilation, Thursday, January 25th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Editor Jonathan Santlofer and contributor Tom Piazza discuss the news story anthology It Occurs to Me That I Am America, News Stories and Art, January 30th at 6 at Octavia Books. The 2018 Writers and Readers Symposium will be held at Hemingbow. That's in St. Francisville on February 17th. Participants include noted authors Catherine Savage Brosnan, John Kemp, Michael H. Rubin, Gennaro Keeley Smith, and M.O. Walsh. Registration is from 8:30 to 9 on Saturday, February 17th at the Hemingbow Convention Center in St. Francisville. From 9 to noon, authors will read and discuss their writing and creative processes. At noon, participants will lunch with the authors, then presentations continue until approximately 3:30. A novel image art show will also be held in conjunction with the symposium, including photographs, paintings, and sculptures related to writing and literature. Gennaro Keeley Smith will lead a writer's retreat for fiction and nonfiction authors, beginning Saturday and continuing Sunday, February 18th. It will be held from 9 to 3:30 Sunday, February 18th, and participants may send submissions in advance. Coordinator for these events is Missy Kuig at Conundrum Books, 504-427-0421. Tickets for both events are available at 2018writersandreaders.brownpapertickets.com. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.